You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
Now, tell me about your father.
City Counselling on 95 BFM, our weekly chat with the good people of Auckland Council.
Auckland Transport are seeking community feedback on a proposal for a new T3 transit lane on Mount Smart Road to relieve congestion during peak times heading towards the Royal Oak roundabout. Between better public transport systems, a time of use charge, and different ways of managing Auckland traffic, I asked Councillor Julie Ferry about how Auckland Council hopes to reduce peak time congestion as the city's population grows. I also talked to Julie Ferry about the recent allocation of funds to community-led projects through Ngā Hapori Momoho. This year, the grant, which aims to improve financial security, improve health outcomes, and grow community and intercultural connection, has approved funding for 11 community groups, six of which are either Māori organisations or delivering strong Māori outcomes. I start with my questions about Auckland Central congestion. The problem of Auckland traffic is a persistent and growing one, with Auckland Transport now seeking feedback on proposals to reduce congestion along Mount Smart Road, especially at the peak of commuting times. Are there any ideas that you think are particularly compelling to address this issue?
One of the things that this is part of is actually looking at things like transit lanes, which mean that single occupant cars can't use them, and we're more focused on higher occupancy vehicles. So often a T3 means that if you have three people in the car, then you can use it, but at least for three you can't. Buses can use them, that kind of stuff. So we're looking at that for a range of roads across the island at the moment, because that's the stuff where buses and higher occupancy vehicles get stuck in the main traffic, and it undermines the efficiency of the whole system, because that moves more people than the single car traffic. So the Mount Smart stuff is part of that, and will hopefully mean that, in particular from a bus system, the bus routes along here, that they're able to move through a lot faster, which then in turn makes it a more attractive and effective option for people to use.
Earlier this year, Mayor Wayne Brown was advocating for a time-of-use charge to manage demand on Auckland's roads at peak times. Do you agree with this solution, or generally with the necessity of imposing the responsibility of congestion onto drivers?
So I think there's definitely some benefits from you doing a congestion charge or a time-of-use charge, probably for the city centre. We've still got quite a way to go on working out what that could look like, and in particular how we could create mitigations for people who have to come into the city centre. They don't have a choice to use another mode of transport, and they may be, for example, on low income, or they're coming into the city centre to access services because of a disability, that kind of stuff, where they don't have another option. So, for example, thinking of people who are cleaning in the middle of the night, the congestion charge might be a time of day thing, not necessarily all the time. It could be that types of vehicles could be exempt. There's all sorts of different ways that technologically you could manage that. And these kinds of things have been really successful overseas. I think London is probably the example that most people are familiar with. One of the key things for me would be that any income from that, or a significant portion of it, needs to go towards improving the alternative for people to use those roads to come into the area that's covered by a charge, such as improving public transport, walking and cycling connections to make those journeys so that you actually have a genuine choice, and you can choose to come in by private car and pay the congestion charge, or you can genuinely choose to use another road. That would be a necessity for me in any scheme.
Last week, I spoke with Councillor Shane Henderson about Auckland Council's recent approval of more homes and businesses in the city centre. In the context of this congestion issue, do you think it might be better to handle Auckland's growing population by building outward rather than upward?
No, definitely not. So building outward actually has a lot of additional costs. So the further out you build the infrastructure, the more it costs. And that's the thing, building out means we have to provide roads around wastewater, drinking water, stormwater, and power, and fibre, and then we also need to provide some facilities out there as well. And all of that costs more. But also, people who live further out, it may sometimes be cheaper to live further out, but then they actually end up paying a lot more in transport costs. So you actually need to look at the whole list of the cost of where you live, not just the cost of the housing alone. Also, if people are living further away, they usually produce more emissions in terms of transport, and we're trying to reduce emissions. We're trying to halve our emissions by 2030 and get to net zero by 2050. So if we go further out, we're building on the land that we literally use to grow our food and taking out of speculation with productive soil. Yes, there's lots of downsides of building out rather than up, and there's also lots of upsides of building up. You get a lot of benefits from having people living, you know, it's revitalising the town centre, having more people living in it and near it, which then in turn supports like businesses. Yeah, this is a no-brainer for me. There's heaps of benefits from adopting a more compact city model. And I know that the City Centre Advisory Panel brings together developers and universities and City Centre residents and the mission and lots of people who are real stakeholders in the City Centre. Their goal is to actually grow the City Centre residential population to 100,000. At the moment it's about 38,000-40,000, so there's a long way to go, but they see that as actually key to unlocking the potential of the City Centre, tackling the mission, making it a great place. That's pretty compelling.
Moving into my next topic, last week just over $300,000 was approved for a number of community-led projects by Auckland Council's Community Committee through the funding applications for Ngā Hapori Momoho. This round received the highest number of applications, according to the General Manager for Community Wellbeing. I was wondering, does Auckland Council at all utilise or reflect on the ideas proposed through this initiative to influence other council-led community projects or services?
So one of the purposes of this fund is to recognise that sometimes communities can do things better than councils can. And so often there might be a partnership element. Sometimes these are projects that have had long-standing council support in terms of funding, but often we'll be looking for the community to deliver for their community. So take, for example, the grant for Auckland Pride, acknowledging that the Pride, you know, the rainbow community are better at working out how to do what that project is focused on, strengths and connections and wellbeing for rainbow youth, than council would be. So, but there is a lot of cross-pollination, if you like. You know, I know that quite often there'll be opportunities for people to get together and share their work, and a lot of that comes through council as their water care communities of practice, which are sort of people working across the organisation and sometimes across the broader sector on similar staff. And so they will come together and share, you know, what works, what doesn't work, what are we learning, what are we learning, and sometimes innovate and try new things. And some of the some of the organisations that receive funds will be involved in that kind of stuff.
For those who aren't able to be supported through the funding round, are there any other ways the council offers to uplift their community-led projects and mahi?
So council has heaps of different funding opportunities, and this is obviously a really important one. One of the challenges that we're facing at the moment is that all of our funds are being significantly oversubscribed, and a lot of local boards which fund the really local stuff, people are desperate for funding. A lot of the big funders have also been financially hit by the downturn. Yeah, a lot of the big funders rely on Richard's investment funds to drive how much they can give each year. And so there's a real pressure in the funding space at the moment for a lot of organisations. Obviously involvement with UK Aotearoa, for example, who have applied for funds that in the past have had no trouble with getting. Sometimes they're successful and sometimes they're not, partly because there's so much competition, but also because a lot of funders are shrinking the criteria so that they can make decisions when they've got way more applicants than they can deal with and less money than they propose. So it is a really difficult time for people seeking funding to sort of change their kaupapa to match what they can get funded. And I can sort of see why you do that as a survival mechanism, but also sometimes it means you're starting to drift away from the natural focus of an organisation, and that's a real problem in the sector. So it's a bit of a, it's been a challenging space for some years around that situation, but at the moment it's even more acute because so many central government opportunities have just disappeared.
I noticed that several of the grants awarded are for projects seeking to uplift the outcomes of young people. Beyond these grants, do you think that Auckland Council, or perhaps even the central government, needs to be investing more into sectors which impact young people?
I think I would probably always say yes to that question. It's a cliche, children are our future, but also I think one of the things that I've become increasingly aware of as a councillor is how we don't break intergenerational cycles of poverty, of trauma, of abuse, and how that plays out for adults. Yeah, I deal with constituents all the time who are struggling with systems, I'm using the council system, and actually this is a generational thing. They've been dealing with this, with challenges for years, and this is just sort of the latest thing. And if we can support people at the youngest possible age, if we can give them a great start in life, if we can make sure everyone feels loved and has a decent home and doesn't end up hospitalised because they live in a mouldy home, and all of that stuff is children and young people. And if we can give young people and children a real safe and understand that they are citizens too and entitled to participate even if they can't vote, then the change that that can bring for our we just need to do it all the time everywhere.
That was a 95 BFM podcast. Support 95 BFM with a B card. Go to 95bfm.com/signup.